This is People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
Corporations can move freely and are not ever considered illegal. But yet when workers try to do the same thing as corporations, looking for the best economic interests of themselves, they are criminalized. Something's wrong.
Even if I die for this, my capacity for love is as big as my capacity for despair, and I am for everyone having basic human rights. That's what I know.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribunal del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. Today's show critically addresses the use of detention centers in the United States. But we first hear about the motivations for war. We not only look at why our government is invading and occupying abroad, we try to discover what are the costs at home. Our guest is a community activist with the Olympia, Washington homeless advocacy organization, Bread and Roses. Also, a longtime teacher, Emily Lardner educates us on the three important reasons our government is involved in the Middle East.
There's three or four reasons why the U.S. is doing what it's doing in the Middle East. And one is an old one, and that's about oil. We're seeing a president whose economic interests are tied with oil in a way we haven't seen before. Another reason, and this is a real basic religious fanatic dogmatism prejudice coming from the U.S. government that I haven't seen so blatantly before, that is anti-Muslim and pro-fundamentalist Christian. I don't think it is Christian by any stretch of that word, but they are justifying their actions with a kind of Christian rhetoric that is definitely anti-Islam. The third is upgrading our military spending, defense contracting as a boondoggle for tons and tons of our public money going through defense contractors into private hands. And that becomes the umbrella under which the government has to cut public services in the name of defending all of us.
Lardner shares a story to raise discussion about how ruling class leaders attempt to convince us that war is good.
I had a chance to be in San Salvador in September. I was on a bus going to the National Cathedral, and I went by a huge new church, evangelical church. The story of that church that really poor people are giving their money to support is the kingdom of heaven is in heaven, not on earth. So give us your money now, because that's how you're going to save your soul. We're engaged in a similar war in the U.S. where the leaders are saying, give us your money now, give us your public will now, keep the public, all the public interests, put them all in our hands, because we're fighting all kinds of war. There's evil, there's bad, there's trouble. We'll look after you, and all you have to do is give us all your money. And there's a way in which the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on crime, all of those wars, the underbelly of them is the taking of money from public hands and individuals and putting it into private hands, and a diminishment of our general public good. But the rhetoric about it is about trust us and we will look after what's good, what's right.
As the government attempts to garner citizens' trust, they are bankrupting public agencies and services. Current officials in the U.S. government use their power and influence to make wealthy people more wealthy through privatization. Ordinary people who are not rich or wealthy suffer and are pitted against one another so that nobody questions the government's actions.
Clearly, the people who are making the decisions about how our public money is being spent and how public money is being moved into private hands, those folks are benefiting. So big corporations are benefiting. The political leadership in our country is clearly benefiting because they all have very nice jobs. The whole industry of lobbyists for the multinational corporations, they're benefiting. There's an elite group of people in Washington, D.C. that are making lots of money from this shifting situation. It's not clear how ordinary people benefit from this, although one of the great ironies is the way in which people get played off each other. So the big growth industry in rural U.S. are private prisons. So poor white folks benefit from the incarceration of urban people of color because they get jobs keeping being guards for those new prisons. On the face of it, poor people benefit from signing bonuses to go into the military, which in theory are supposed to provide health, education, long-term education benefits, some kind of a livable wage. In fact, it doesn't work like that. But there's a, on the face of it, it looks like ordinary people also benefit from these wars. That's not true. Ordinary people's interests are being pitted one against the other. The costs of these wars are huge. I mean, one way to calculate the cost is to just get a sense of the federal budget, and the costs are bigger than money, but in terms of our federal budget, just as a common denominator, if you imagine a pie and you take a fifth or a fourth of that pie is going to straight up defense, military, blowing other people up, blowing up their water systems, blowing up children, blowing up women, shooting people, dropping uranium on them. That's a fourth of our public money is going to that. That piece of the pie is getting bigger. The other piece of the pie that's getting bigger is the amount of interest that we owe as a country. And so when those two pieces grow, but the pie itself is shrinking because rich people are paying less in taxes, that squeezes all the other pieces in the pie. So now we're fighting with each other about who's going to get what money. So are we going to give money so babies can get vaccinated? Are we going to have money so that folks can go to college? Or are we going to have money so that teachers, public school teachers, can get a raise? Can't have all those things. So now we've got the health people fighting against the education people, fighting against the higher education people, because they're all trying to get their little shrinking piece of the pie. One of the big costs is the people who are trying to do good work are turning against each other, competing for resources, and not collectively organizing against more and more of our shared resources going towards the military, going towards violence being perpetrated in other countries in our names. That's a huge cost. The physical cost of people living in poverty, there's one problem we're having right now in our community is that we've got a men's shelter. There's 40 men staying in it. The shelter is full of mold. Here's the dilemma. The county health person said, you can get that tested for mold and it'll probably say it's toxic, but you get it condemned. There's no place for those men to live. So the choice is buy bleach, wash the walls every day, or get the mold tested, have it certified as unsafe, put everybody out on the street. What's the right choice? Our county has no money for housing for folks, in large part because the federal money is going to war and we're collecting less money at the federal level from rich people with these permanent tax cuts put in by the Bush administration and supported by both political parties.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. We're speaking today with Bread and Roses community activist Emily Lardner about war. She reminds us that while important to fight against something, it is equally important to fight for something.
One of the strongest sources of resistance to the war is a counter-recruitment campaign, and people are doing really good work around counter-recruitment. So they're organizing with school boards, with teachers, with parents to make sure that kids know what the actual contracts of military signing say and that kids know they've got other opportunities to have decent jobs. That work is exciting, that counter-recruitment campaign, but there needs to be a partnership with people who are good with local economic development to say, fine, I don't want to join the military, but I do need a job. So how are we going to create some local jobs? And those conversations are starting to happen in communities. Another thing that's starting to happen is just straight up political action saying no to the occupation, whether it's vigils or postcards or demonstrations, being clear about that. There's a real active campaign in Washington State to put pressure on the governor to say we want the National Guard home. Folks know she can't do that. That's not actually the way the federal legislation works, but that's another place working with Veterans for Peace to say we want people not to be involved in that war effort. So those are some of the ways people are working locally, specifically around the war. The harder thing to figure out is what else is connected to the war? We got a group together talking about resisting the war, and someone brought up, hey, let's work on reducing our dependence on oil. So there's some education that we need about how projects are connected to each other. Also, how we can organize by being for something as opposed to only being against something. And that's where local organizing to try to implement Article 25 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights begins to make a lot of sense, because people can say, I'm for this, and people are for it all over the world. Article 25 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted in 1948, says, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of themselves and their family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or the lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond their control. Then it goes on to say, motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether they are born in or out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same social protection. That means that what is in the hearts of everyone, what everyone believes for themselves and wants for themselves and their families, we've got to say in loud voices together, we really, based out of love, based out of compassion, based out of the like our biggest hearts, we want other people and ourselves to have what it takes to live a decent life. That's what we're for. That's the main thing we're for. It's really coming from a place of deep, deep love. The way I love my children is the way I love other children, is the way all children deserve to be loved. All adults deserve to be loved. There's nobody I can look at eye to eye and say, I'm glad I have a place to sleep and you don't deserve one. Everybody deserves the basic stuff it takes for us to live a decent life. The thing we've got to remember is, if I'm in a position to advocate for that for someone else, the time is likely to come when I am going to need that person to advocate for those things for me. So it's, what do I need in order to be okay? What I need is what everybody needs, and that's what we got to be asking for all of us. That's it. I think the art of us organizing effectively is coming together around what we're for. And again, I think what we're for are basic human rights for everyone. Because if we take the solid, unshakable position that we want everybody to have water, food, housing, education, healthcare, basic stuff, if we advocate everybody having that and we stick to that unshakably, everything has to change around that, because we're going to have to redistribute material, wealth, resources, rethink how we make decisions at all levels in order to just make that simple thing happen. So I would wish for the anti-war movement that we could become a for universal human rights for everyone, because that lets everyone connect their organizing efforts together around basic rights for all of us in this country and every country.
Emily Lardner shares a powerful message people can use to understand what they're fighting for.
One experience I had that really moved me was, again, when I was in San Salvador, I went to Mass, and I went to the National Cathedral, and there were actually two Masses being held at the same time. There was the Mass upstairs in the golden cathedral, really gorgeous soaring ceiling, beautiful art, and that was the ordinary traditional Mass. Down in the basement in the crypt where Oscar Romero was buried, there was a popular Mass, and that Mass was banned after Romero was killed, and now it's come back, and now it's being banned again. But in that Mass, the message is, it's the perpetual living message of compassion that says the right thing to do is to be in solidarity with everybody else we love. The right thing to do is to say, how are other people doing? And the hard thing is, you really do have to choose. You can't go upstairs to the mass that says, well, maybe in heaven they're going to redistribute wealth and people will stop suffering. You can go upstairs and think like that, or you go downstairs. But if you go downstairs, then you're really called to act all the time. The other thing I want to talk about or remind myself and others about is, again, the seriousness of despair, because there is plenty of reason for despair. And for me, our capacity for despair is the exact same capacity we have for love. And so the art of sustaining ourselves for a long collective struggle, which is what we're engaged in, is to remember that despair and love, they come out of the same channel. And so when I'm most in despair, that's a reminder of what my soul yearns for in terms of love. And when I move into that place of love, then I'm back there with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and saying, even if I die for this, my capacity for love is as big as my capacity for despair. And I am for everyone having basic human rights. That's what I know. And putting energy into that channel and saying, now that I know what I'm for, now that I know what love looks like in the material world, now I'd like to know, where do I organize? Who can I work with? What's the invitation for me to get involved? And when you're in that place of love and clarity, the invitations for work to do will come to you.
This is People's Tribune Radio. We're now going to the streets of Tacoma, Washington, where correspondent Tony Zaragoza interviewed people at a rally against the 2006 Northwest Security Forum.
I'm Tim Smith, and I'm the chairperson of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee in Tacoma.
Tell us where we're at and what we're doing.
Well, right now we're at the Tacoma Sheraton, and the Tacoma Sheraton is hosting this year the Northwest Security Forum. This is something that was sort of put together, a mix between local military personnel, senior military personnel, defense contractors, in the interests of the defense system in the Pacific Northwest. So they're doing a lot of things. They're having special speakers come in. The commander of Northern Command is coming, speaker from the Navy, from the Air Force, and they're talking about the U.S. Armed Forces and how we're going to shape it to fight what they're calling now the Long War. The Long War is the new euphemism for the global war on terror, or the war of extremism, or whatever they wanted to call it before. Now it's the Long War. So here we're having a series of meetings, black tie dinners, balls, parties, a big soiree type thing, a lot of, you know, intermingling and networking type stuff. So today we've started our event at the detention center. We're showing that the efforts moved against immigrants, the things that they're doing against immigrants and people that have come to this country seeking a better way of life, has been twisted and turned since 9/11 and into part of this overall long war. That was announced rather specifically by the Bush administration in October of 2001. They put out a piece of a guidance that's talked about using immigration as part of the war on terror. And we've seen that happen over and over again. So the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, we believe that our civil liberties and our freedoms as guaranteed by the Bill of Rights apply to us as citizens, and that we should not exclude someone who's not from this country from those same protections, and yet that's what's happening. So this is linking that whole cycle, that all-encompassing event. It's very nice that everyone has come together to do that today.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Northwest Detention Center, where it's at, what it is, and who's there?
The Northwest Detention Center is built at 1625 East J Street. This was what was called a brownfield site. This was a Superfund site that originally had housed a meatpacking plant, a gasification plant where they used to turn coal into gas, and so it was highly contaminated and didn't really have much other use other than to be used for some sort of warehousing. So the Northwest Detention Center is built on top of this facility. It was built by a private company with the sole purpose of leasing the space inside to the federal government, and in this case, to house people from other countries that are undergoing some review of their immigration status.
Why is it that you chose to do the demonstration outside of it?
Well, first off, the location of the facility on the Tide Flats is in a very industrialized area, probably on purpose. By putting it down there, it looks just like any other gray warehouse. Having the demonstration there shows the facility and shows the government and expresses our distaste for the facility and what happens there. Shows that we are concerned and we want to have oversight of that facility. And so the only way you do that is by demonstrating your presence. We have to be just as involved in taking back control of our street, our sidewalk, and not letting them think that they can just exclude that or make that some sort of a black hole. That's why we wanted to have the demonstration there.
For folks outside of the Northwest, are there other things that we should know about that might be impacting our own communities as well?
Well, people should know, with this expansion of immigration as part of the war on terror, and with the expansion of laws and the pursuit of those from other countries within our borders, you're going to see in your community an increased attempt to find people who are from other countries here illegally. You're going to see a move nationally and in the upcoming elections on regards to immigration issues. You should be on the lookout for any attempts in your community for these privatized prisons to come into play.
Faculty member at the Evergreen State College, Therese Saliba, works for the Arab American Community Coalition and for Justice in Palestine. She speaks about the detention of families as a result of the war on terror.
One of the really critical things for me in this issue, I've been interviewing and working with students from Evergreen State College. We've been putting together a video documentary on detention cases. And one of the successful cases that we followed was a story of the Hamoui family who were held in INS detention in Seattle. And it used to be that the old INS detention center was right downtown, and communities would gather outside the detention center every week in Seattle while the Hamouis were being held. And we had the opportunity to interview Nadine Hamoui. She was 18 years old when she was taken into detention in 2002 and was released 9 months later. She was held in solitary confinement with her mother for 9 months. Her father was held in a separate cell. But during that time, they could see the community protests outside their window. And I think it's very significant that we just marched down from this tide flat area. It's very isolated. There's no signs where you would know even where the detention center is. It's kind of hidden in this industrial waste zone. It's very hard for people to get to and to find. And it's significant that they're moving people out of the city centers where communities can provide support for detainees, because it was that community support that had a very significant impact on their case and actually secured their release and their asylum. They're Syrians who have been living north of Seattle for many years. So what we're seeing in these cases is not only do the families have to travel very far to see their, usually it's men that are in detention, but not exclusively, but they're trying to disempower the community opposition to these detentions as well by removing them from, removing the detention centers, which are under private prison corporations, out of the city centers.
Rebecca Saldana of the Service Employees International Union describes why she is participating in the march and rally.
For me personally, I'm out here because so often when we're talking about homeland security, what happens is that some community is scapegoated, and for the last few years it's been the immigrant workers that have been scapegoated. And what's ironic, for me personally, I'm here for a couple of workers, three workers that clean the Homeland Security building in Tequila. They work for a subcontractor called Cascadian. Cascadian's one of the very few companies that operate in King County, where we primarily have our janitors, that does not provide community standards, which for us is 9 out of 10 janitors have full family medical and dental and make a decent wage. But the janitors that clean Homeland Security don't have security at home for their kids because they don't have any health care or any access to affordable health care for their children. So I'm walking for those workers. I'm also walking for another worker that works for that same company, Cascadian, who happens to be from Somali. And her religious leader, Imam Ibrahim, is being detained unlawfully and unjustly right now in that building behind us that we're just leaving.
Can you tell us what this issue of detentions of roundups, of scapegoating of immigrants. What does it tell us about the state of our nation today and where we're headed?
I think what it talks about is the fact that we're lost as a nation, and that really what we need to do is get back to our roots. That, you know, like my father, he's from Mexico. He came up as a farm worker and as an immigrant, initially without status, and then, you know, as a young child got status. And he came not as a terrorist. He came as a young child looking for an opportunity. And he found that here in the Northwest, where he was able to move from farm work to eventually a union factory job, where he was able to put his children through college. And that's what most immigrants, including those that are being detained, are looking for, that same thing. And instead of dealing with the complex issues and realities of that corporations can move freely and are not ever considered illegal immigrants in countries of the South or the East of us, but yet when workers try to do the same thing as corporations, looking for the best economic interests of themselves, they are criminalized. And so to me, what we're looking at right now is there's Sensenbrenner's piece of legislation, which is criminalizing me for taking my cousin to the store. Is something's wrong.
We're concerned that this government is linking the problems in the immigration law to terrorism and national security, because that's really unconscionable. They make the implication somehow, they send messages that these people are terrorists, that immigrants equal terrorists. That is not true. That is just simply not true. That's why we're here today.
But the privatization of public resources. Why is the Department of Homeland Security paying the privately held Correctional Services Corporation to operate federal detention centers? The government is taking us for a ride. Trying to link immigration to terrorism is but another scare tactic. If people are scared, they're not questioning why our money is going into the pockets of corporations and the wealthy. If the government creates a link in the minds of the people that immigrant equals terrorists, then we become divided. We must not let this happen. We must unite around the needs that will forever fight terrorism and free us from this system. Free healthcare for all, free education for all. We must oppose deportation of human beings. That is all we have time for on this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribunal del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 800-691-6888. That number once again is 1-800-691-6888. Or visit us on the web, www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.